All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Today's November 4th, 2025. And our top story this morning is Palantir. WTF is going on over at AI darling Palantir. That company that nobody really knows what the hell they actually do over there, but they make a lot of money. They do things for the government, and we're all kind of afraid to really ask, and we all kind of know, like, what Palantir's up to. Hey, if you got any feedback for Palantir, feel free to send yourself a text and let them know how you feel, that kind of thing. Well, Palantir's revenue up 63%. Great numbers, $1.18 billion in revenue versus $1.09 expected. That is the 21st consecutive revenue beat in a row for Palantir. Maybe the expectations kind of suck. If we beat expectations 21 in a row, maybe it's because the expectations are wrong. It's like, hey, coach, we lost the last 21 games. Should we do something different? No, we got a great streak going here. Anyways, look, the stock up 174% year to date, up 1,873% over the last 5 years. It's been one hell of a run for Palantir. And at a PE of 470 times earnings, there's nothing you can report that's good enough in that situation. Your stock is, it's got a date with reality. And that's really what it comes down to, is the valuation just got so obscenely ridiculous for Palantir. The stock had to come down. Gravity always wins eventually. No stock ever escapes the Earth's gravitational pull and just continues sailing off into the oblivion forever in an upward direction. It just doesn't work that way. And so Palantir's getting clobbered here. The stock was down about 7.5% the last I looked. At one point, it was down 8.5%. This is sparking what appears to be a risk-off rally across the board here. Look, we've got assets like quantum computing stocks are selling off today. Nuclear startups like Oklo and Fermi, they're selling off. The NeoClouds, CoreWeave, Nebius, they're down a couple of percent. All of the Mag 7 are down this morning a little bit. The Mag 7 is outperforming some of the more risky or highly risky names. But we've got risk off. Now, I would add the one thing also, Bitcoin selling off big. All of crypto getting clobbered here this morning. The one thing that makes this not quite a risk off rally is gold and silver. They're also down as well. We got a little bit of a drop in treasury yields, all right? A little bit of bond buying here. That's kind of risk off, but it's not really that much. And I can't help but wonder about that SOFR thing that we saw yesterday, that worries of funding stress and a liquidity problem. Well, SOFR, it did come down this morning. We were 4.22 yesterday, up from 4.04 the day before that. So that was a big spike in SOFR. And we were talking on the stream yesterday, like, oh, we're not sure. Is this a problem? Okay, it was the end of the month. We're used to seeing end of the month spikes. I'd expect it to come right back down, but we've got these other things, the discount window usage, the repo uptick, reverse repo getting near zero, the Fed's comments about money markets. Is there or isn't there a liquidity crisis? Well, this morning, SOFR came down to 4.13. So 4.04 to 4.22 to 4.13. It came down, but it didn't come down that much. So, yes, there apparently was something of an end-of-month spike involved there, but that has now come and gone, and it hasn't totally cycled itself out. So there is at least some degree of short-term stress building in the financial system. A little bit of that was end-of-month, just fluctuations in the market from a lot of money moving around, but apparently not all of it. So we got to keep an eye on that one. We've also got gold and silver not doing well today. They're both in the red. During a risk-off trade in stocks, you'd expect gold and silver to not be doing so well, but they are red. So maybe there's something more to be looked into with that short-term funding. I'll be talking about that with Joe Brown later tonight when he comes on the channel to talk about liquidity. But another interesting story last night, Michael Burry of Big Short fame, he released his 13Fs for his firm, Scion Capital, and he is short Palantir and NVIDIA. Yikes. Now, look, guys, there is nobody out there who has been a bigger NVIDIA bear than me over the last few years. I have been screaming from the highest mountain, everybody, look at all the BS at this company, but I have not shorted it the whole time. I don't dare short a fad, a mania, a cult. What Burry is doing is pretty risky, and that's pretty interesting because it was just a few days ago that he came back on Twitter, as he does every now and then. He kind of like sticks his head out if he sees his shadow, four more years of bull market. I don't know how that works. But he came out and made this, you know, bubbles comment, but it suggested he wasn't trading it. And then we get the 13Fs and he is trading it. That's interesting. That's almost certainly going to trigger all the AI stock bros out there who think they're smarter than Michael Burry, who are going to be like, Michael Burry got one wrong last year. That makes me smarter than him. No, bro, it doesn't. You're not smarter than Michael Burry. You really aren't. You're just betting on the same crowded AF trade that everybody else is. Now, look, is this going to work out for Burry? I don't know. The Palantir short sure as heck is this morning, if assuming it's still on. We've also got more fallout from First Brands. This is interesting. The founder, Patrick James, is being sued by the company. Now, the company was taken over by bankruptcy advisors after the fraud was exposed. Now they're suing Patrick James, claiming he pilfered hundreds of millions of dollars from the company for personal use, asking the court to freeze his assets, trying to claw some of that money back. And that's just as we have an article in the Wall Street Journal talking about how Wall Street is now intensifying scrutiny, looking for fraud after First Brands and Tricolor and the failure of all the risk management people everywhere to detect this stuff before it happened. And then, of course, Bonken Brombot and Carriox Capital and all the other companies that have had issues since then. Not a good look. And we've got UBS is out this morning also warning of systemic risk from weak U.S. insurance regulations. Now, that's interesting because insurance companies in the U.S. have been getting into private equity and private credit a lot in the last few years. As a matter of fact, some of these private equity firms have been buying insurance companies and then using the assets at the insurance companies to loan money to their own private equity portfolio companies to keep those zombies alive, which means they've been loading up the balance sheets of insurance companies with worthless debt from cash-burning companies. But this UBS warning is saying that most of these ratings, most of this private credit that's going into these insurance companies, they're being shopped around to these small mom and pop shop ratings agencies that are basically incentivized to just give good grades for more money so that they can sell this crap with weaker capital requirements. In other words, the scene with Georgia and the black glasses in The Big Short. Yeah, that. Oh, we didn't learn our lesson. Shocking, I know. Yeah, that's going on again. ISM Manufacturing PMI came out yesterday. That was pretty bad. The quote was, business continues to be severely depressed. Shout out to Johnny Bravo. I saw this one on his video last night. Yikes, guys. The manufacturing PMIs are terrible. Everybody is citing tariffs as the reason for that. And it's just a reminder that maybe one day we get some benefit from these tariffs. It may or may not result in the reshoring of domestic manufacturing and revitalizing of American industry. But the pain will definitely get here first. And you can see it in this ISM PMI. But luckily, everybody over in the manufacturing sector, they mentioned lowering headcount, cutting people to compensate for this. But we wouldn't know because the government shutdown is now tied for the longest government shutdown ever. And of course, we have no labor data, so no way of knowing if it's actually resulting in job losses, even though there's plenty of anecdata suggesting that it is. We've got a crazy story about Amazon and four of their data centers in Oregon. They can't get power. No power at all for three of them, not enough for a fourth. Hey, that problem, like there's not enough power in the country to power these data centers. Sooner or later, that shows up and you can't switch the things on. Amazon having that problem this morning. I'm sure that's going to be great for this AI bubble. We got good earnings from Ferrari. That's interesting because wealthy consumers are very important. They're carrying a lion's share of the economy right now. What can we learn from these Ferrari earnings and compare to like Porsche and Aston Martin and Jaguar that we saw earlier this year? That's interesting. Uber earnings, I can't figure out WTF is going on with Uber earnings. I have two articles saying two completely different things. The stock is down. What a mess. I can't stand Silicon Valley and their accounting creativity. And last but not least, we got Yum Brands trying to figure out what they're going to do with Pizza Hut, which is struggling, even as some of their other restaurant names are doing pretty well. Fast food companies doing pretty well this morning. Guys, we've got a lot on the docket once again this morning. How's about we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for you new guys so you can come on back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads because we do this one every single day. And right now, the S&P 500 is down 73 points, 1.07%. You will find most stocks are red this morning. The Dow is also down 250 points, 0.53% lower. And the NASDAQ is leading the way lower. Palantir dragging this one down 1.49%, off by 386 points for the NASDAQ, adding to yesterday's losses. The DXY, interesting, stronger again this morning, 100.12. That is up by another 25 basis points. This morning, it's the pound that is losing a lot of value, pushing the DXY higher. Chancellor of the Exchequer, Rachel Reeves, came out and would not rule out tax increases in the UK to close their budget gap that they're struggling with after they tried to do spending cuts earlier this year. That failed. Now they're like, we'll try increasing taxes, even though anybody that had any taxes to pay has already left England for another country because they raised their taxes before, and there's been a mass exodus of millionaires out of the UK. Well, the British pound started to sell off on that news. That's pushing the dollar higher this morning. Looking over at the bond market, we've got a lot of red, but just barely here. Not really any big moves. The 30-year yield is lower by almost 1 point, 4.682. The 10-year's at 4.095. That's lower by a point and change. The 2-year, 3.578, off by 2 points and change. And the 1 month is actually making the biggest move here, off by almost 4 points at 3.945. Now, we were talking about SOFR briefly, guys, and the big worry was that we went on October 30th from 4.04. Actually, let's go back one more day. We were at 4.27, talked about this one yesterday. Then the Fed cut by 25 basis points. That should have taken SOFR down by 25 points. It only took it down to 4.04, 23 points. We were watching that gap between SOFR and the Fed funds rate widen a little bit, indicative of short-term stress building in the system. Then on Halloween, we got a big spike to 4.22, virtually wiping out the Fed's rate cut. That had me worried yesterday, had a lot of people worried. We didn't know how much of that was the end of the month. And then you can see SOFR today, 4.13. So some of that spike was risk building. Some of it was just the end of the month. Will this continue to fall back towards that 4.044, or will we continue to grind higher? I guess we just got to wait and see, guys. But keep an eye on this stuff. The engine is making funny noises. We're still rolling, but the engine's making noises. Looking over at commodities, we got red everywhere today. That's that stronger dollar and that general risk-off sentiment. But I'm really surprised to see metals underperforming here. Gold, $3,976 for spot gold. That's off by 25 bucks or 0.63%. Spot silver is getting in on the sell-off, off by 44 cents or about 0.93%. $47.64 for spot silver in London. London silver still trading at a premium over December New York silver, which is at $47.39, down by 65 cents or 1.37%. So we're still looking at about, what do we got, about 25, 26 cents worth of arbitrage between New York and London. Still indicative of a little bit of a shortage in London, but it's not really moving here, so we'll keep an eye on that one. But regardless, the metals have had a fantastic run this year. This pullback doesn't surprise me. I like the shiny. Copper is lower by 2.1% here this morning. Platinum and palladium both lower by about 2%. Metals just down across the board. WTI crude oil is also down 1.1%, $60.38 for December WTI futures. Commodities not looking good here. And since the government says Bitcoin is a commodity, let's talk about this one too. $103,845 risk off in crypto as well, down $2,700 from yesterday. That's a pretty brutal two-day sell-off here, from around $110,000 all the way down to under $104,000 in just 2 days. Crypto is down across the board. Names like Ethereum, XRP, Solana, all selling off here, guys. The market is de-risking this morning. Be careful, guys. I do think crypto winter is here. Also, we are now butting up against that. What day was that tariff freakout? October 17th was the day that the market freaked out when Trump threatened 100% tariffs on China. That risk has since somewhat ebbed, subsided, whatever you want to say. But we're back down at those prices. We take out that low, guys. Look out. Crypto winter is here. What's driving this risk off this morning? It is Palantir. Palantir slides on AI valuation concerns and Burry put options. Dr. Michael Burry is back in the news this morning. Palantir Technologies slid in early trading on concern about the company's lofty valuation and the sustainability of the AI rally, even after it topped analyst estimates for third quarter sales and raised its annual revenue outlook. Palantir shares fell as much as 8.1% in pre-market trading on Tuesday as broader stock market indices declined. Adding to the concerns, hedge fund manager Michael Burry disclosed bearish wagers on Palantir and AI chip leader NVIDIA. Burry's Scion Asset Management bought Palantir put options, which increased in value as shares declined, according to the latest 13F regulatory filing. The stock had soared more than 170% this year through Monday when it closed at a record. The company had a price-to-sales ratio of 85 as of Friday, the highest in the S&P 500 index. Guys, this was just nutty, the valuations here. All these numbers are completely disengaged from fundamentals, said D.A. Davidson's Gil Loria, who's been a guest on this channel before, in an interview with Bloomberg Television. This is a company with a $4 billion run rate that's growing 63%. There's nothing even remotely close to that, which is how we got to the situation where the valuation is at unprecedented levels. So you do have crazy growth here. 63% is fantastic, but the valuation is even crazier. Mandeep Singh, senior analyst at Bloomberg Intelligence, said that investors likely wanted more guidance about the following year. Palantir gave a forecast for the current quarter, Singh said, but I think everyone wants some sense of 2026. Revenue increased 63% to $1.18 billion in the period ended in September, the company said on Monday. Analysts on average estimated $1.09 billion. In the current quarter, sales will be about $1.33 billion compared with an average projection of $1.19 billion. So it was a beat, and it was a big one, but it wasn't enough. Stock, oh, let's get this up. Stock down 7.9%, almost 8% here, $190.68. So is this the end for Palantir? Not really. Like, let's look. Year-to-date, 174% year-to-date. Palantir can afford to drop a few here, all right? It's had a great year. Look at the five-year, 1,873% gain in 5 years. So, yeah, we're back down to 190. So what is it? It's something more like a 1,750% gain after the opening bell rings. Palantir now down 8%. But the whole market is looking at these Palantir earnings and then looking at everything else in their portfolio this morning and saying, huh, about that. And not helping is that Michael Burry of Big Short fame. Here's what he posted, by the way. Michael Burry goes short Palantir and NVIDIA in his latest 13F filings. Now, look, 13F filings, guys, this is a snapshot of Burry's fund at the end of the last quarter. So for all we know, he has already closed these positions. That's important to keep that in mind. Whenever you get 13Fs, it's a look in the rearview mirror back in time. It's not necessarily what they are. He could have increased his position. He could have closed it already. But here in very, very blurry ink, you can see Palantir puts representing 5 million shares. I think that means he bought 50,000 put options there. Significant portion of his fund, he's also bought puts in NVIDIA, representing 1 million shares. So I guess that's what, 10,000 put options he bought in NVIDIA. That's a ballsy move, not going to lie. Shorting those names is standing in front of a freight train and betting your life that it's going to stop. It's something I've never been willing to do. And it's also interesting considering just a few days ago, Burry put this out on Twitter. Sometimes we see bubbles. Sometimes there is something to do about it. Sometimes the only winning move is not to play. Now, this kind of suggests Burry is saying AI is in a bubble, but I'm not doing anything about it. And then, of course, we learned in the 13F that he is short some of these names. So what do you think, Burry, between these two things, what is he really telling us? Is he telling us, maybe he's telling us, I already got stopped out on these short positions in my 13F because they go up in a straight line? Or maybe he's saying, guys, I did this thing and it's very risky. Don't follow me into this bet because you could get wiped out, right? Burry, it was about a year ago, he famously posted one word, sell, and the market has gone up in a straight line here. A lot of people are honestly classless about this, in my opinion, but a lot of people are very critical of Burry because he got one wrong or he's gotten some wrong, saying, oh, Michael Burry had one good trade. Yeah, it was a pretty freaking big one, don't you think? You know, when's the last time you bet against everybody else and were right and made hundreds of millions of dollars in the process and they wrote books and made movies about your trades? So all you people who are blasting Michael Burry thinking you're smarter than Michael Burry, guy, you're not. Just throwing that out there. Anyways, interesting take from Burry here. But we've got more takeaways here, or more fallout from First Brands. This one in Bloomberg early this morning. First Brands sues founder for allegedly pilfering firm funds. Pilfering firm funds. Try to say that five times fast. First Brands sued founder Patrick James for allegedly misappropriating hundreds of millions of dollars from the U.S. automotive supplier, which collapsed into bankruptcy in September. Lawyers for the company, now run by restructuring consultants Alvarez and Marshall, alleged that James borrowed funds on fraudulent terms, only then to routinely and regularly divert cash for himself and his family, according to Southern District of Texas filing dated November 3rd. More than $700 million was funneled from First Brands directly to James and his affiliated entities from 2018 to 2025, they claimed. Keep in mind, this is a $12 billion bankruptcy now. James secretly pilfered some of the company's assets to fund his and his family's lavish lifestyle. In short, he lined his pockets at the expense of First Brands and its creditors, according to the document. The plaintiffs drew on data for more than 7 million documents, as well as bank records and a collection of devices from employees. In the 35-page document, lawyers paint a picture of James' luxuriant spending habits, pointing to a fleet of at least 17 exotic cars and a celebrity personal trainer. In some cases, payments to James and his family were made directly from First Brands accounts, including at least $3 million in rent paid over 2019 to 2024 for a New York townhouse and $500,000 paid to a private chef in 2025. First Brands lawyers asked the court for relief to freeze any and all assets belonging to James and the other defendants. First Brands and James lawyers didn't respond to requests for comments sent outside business hours. So more fallout, more fraud, more theft. And Wall Street is taking stock of this. We got this one yesterday in the Wall Street Journal. Wall Street intensifies scrutiny of fraud after a spate of loan losses. Lenders are increasing due diligence and demanding access to more data. Hey, better late than never, guys. A string of alleged frauds by corporate borrowers is spurring a reckoning across Wall Street, sending bankers and investors scrambling to prevent future blowups. Keep in mind the context of that spike in SOFR yesterday as this is going on. They could be related. Lenders are increasing due diligence and demanding a longer history of financial data from companies. Some are inserting conditions that permit them to do more frequent checkups before agreeing to make loans. A group of the biggest names in banking, investment management, and accounting have formed a task force that will take a deeper look at the nature of the problem and how to protect investors. The frauds that have emerged so far, which involve small to mid-sized companies in sectors such as autos and telecommunications, haven't sparked widespread trouble in the market or economy, but they have generated fallout for both regional banks and Wall Street giants such as JPMorgan Chase and BlackRock. And the string of revelations has made it harder to dismiss any one case as an isolated event. But boy, howdy, did they try, didn't they? Yes, the string of bankruptcies has made it harder for them to dismiss these isolated events. But holy shit, they said it over and over and over again, didn't they? Oh, it's an isolated event. It's a one-off. Here's another isolated and another. Boy, everything seems to be very isolated. Since the structured finance industry's infamous role bundling bad loans into supposedly safe bonds ahead of the 2008 and 2009 financial crisis, it has become more regulated and members have taken pride in their improved lending practices. That, Bright said, has added to the sense of urgency to figure out whether recent fraud is a one-off or something systemic. The collapse of First Brands in particular has brought attention to how a variety of lenders from banks to asset management and private credit investors have been jumping into increasingly popular asset-based financing strategies, including providing short-term working capital backed by receivables. Those strategies remain popular, but now some of those lenders are asking to take a look at companies' record of payments on receivables stretching back years rather than months, and inserting language into loan agreements that allow them to do more regular appraisals on the collateral, said Adams of Uzi and Lull. So Wall Street is getting more careful after this series of isolated events, and they're trying to figure out, is this a systemic risk? Well, UBS seems to think so. UBS warns of systemic risk. How about that? From weak U.S. insurance regulation. It's not just banks. It's insurance companies, which are essentially banks. They're just regulated differently, but they're pretty much the same business model. UBS Group's chairman warned against looming risks in the U.S. insurance industry, citing weak and complex regulations amid an unprecedented boom in private financing. We're beginning to see huge rating agency arbitrage in the insurance business, said Chairman Colm Kelleher to his fellow financiers at Hong Kong Monetary Authority's Global Financial Leaders Investment Summit on Tuesday. In 2007, subprime was all about rating agency arbitrage, What you see now is a massive growth in small rating agencies ticking the box for compliance of investment. Let me translate that. They're doing the same bullshit they did in 2007. These small rating agency firms, in order to be more competitive, they're just giving out good ratings without really looking, rubber stamping this shit AAA, selling it to your retirement portfolio, because if they don't, somebody else is going to do it. This is exactly that scene with the lady in the obnoxious glasses from The Big Short. Private credit grades used by insurance companies tend to be concentrated among smaller ratings firms, raising the risk of inflated assessments of creditworthiness. The Bank for International Settlements said in a report published last week about systemic risks and policy changes in their life insurance industry. So it's not just UBS, it's the Bank of International Settlements saying it now. Insurers typically seek out higher ratings because of their lower capital requirements, while smaller ratings agencies may face commercial incentives to provide better grades, according to the BIS. It's just a rating shop. And keep in mind, guys, these insurance companies are dumping grounds now. The private equity firms are buying insurance names just so those insurance companies will loan money to their portfolio companies and pass that risk on to the insurance customers. Everybody can see it. It's getting louder. But don't worry. The economy is just humming along. Business continues to be severely depressed, says U.S. manufacturers, and they're blaming tariffs. ISM manufacturing index in contraction territory for eighth month in a row. Shout out to Johnny Bravo, had this one on his show yesterday. This is a very yikes kind of moment here. American manufacturing contracted for the eighth month in a row, a new survey showed, and there appeared to be no end in sight because of high tariffs imposed by the Trump administration. A closely followed manufacturing index slipped to 48.7 in October, down from 49.1 in the prior month. The ISM said on Monday, any number below 50 signals contraction. The ISM surveys executives every month about how their businesses are doing, and the complaints came through loud and clear. High and constantly shifting tariffs have raised costs, depressed sales, and pressured companies to lay off employees. Business continues to be severely depressed. Profits are down, and extreme taxes, tariffs, are being shouldered by all companies in our space, said one executive at a maker of transportation equipment. Steel tariffs are killing us, another manufacturer told ISM. The tariffs are still causing issues with imported goods into the U.S., an executive at a chemical maker said. The inflation issues continue. There really wasn't any good news. Production declined. New orders contracted for the eighth time in the past 9 months. Manufacturers timed to size of their Manufacturers trimmed the size of their labor force. Employment hasn't grown since January. We're continuing to find ways to reduce overhead, which means letting go of experienced workers, the transportation executive said. Big picture, the absence of critical U.S. economic reports to the government Big picture, the absence of critical U.S. economic reports due to the government shutdown gives even greater weight to private sector measures such as the ISM surveys. And what they find is not good news. Sorry, guys, I butchered that one. But you can see the ISM survey here. Anything below 50, which is about this level, is in contraction. And we have eight straight months of contraction now below 50. And if you zoom out a little bit further to a three-year chart, here, let's do a five-year chart. We really only had 2 months above 50, January and February of this year. And other than that, we've been below 50 pretty much since October of 2022. U.S. has been in recession since 2022. I've been saying it for freaking years. The AI bubble and the ridiculous government spending are the only thing painting over that crap. The economy is not in good shape. The pain from the tariffs will get here before the benefits. And like they said, guys, we don't have a lot of visibility into what this is actually doing to the data because U.S. government shutdown ties record as congressional inaction takes toll. The U.S. government shutdown on Tuesday entered its 35th day, matching a record set during President Trump's first term for the longest in history as Republicans and Democrats in Congress continue to blame each other for the standoff. The toll increases by the day. Food assistance for the poor has been halted for the first time. That should be coming back at least 50% of it later this week. So I guess we're all going on a diet, or one in eight of us are going on a diet. Federal workers from airports to law enforcement and the military are going unpaid, and the economy is flying blind with limited government reporting. Guys, both parties seem okay with the shutdown. This thing is going to last for a while, so don't expect resolution anytime soon. Meanwhile, Amazon says Berkshire Utility is failing to power their data centers. All right. This should be bigger news than it is. We've been warning about the power problems at data centers for a while now, and apparently Amazon has built it, and it no worky without zappy zappy. Amazon alleges that Berkshire Hathaway's owned utility in Oregon is failing to provide sufficient power for four new data center facilities, highlighting the strain rapid expansion of technology facilities is putting on the electric grid. Yeah, you read that right. Four data centers can't come online. Amazon lodged a complaint last week with the Public Utility Commission of Oregon, alleging that Portland-based Pacific Corp breached obligations that date back to 2021 to provide sufficient power for the projects. Amazon said the company provided insufficient power for one data center campus, no power for a second campus, and has refused to even complete its own standard contracting process for the third and fourth data center campuses. Holy shit. How is this not bigger news? One data center can't get enough power. A second can't get any power. And number three and number four, the utility won't even look at them. But they're still building them. They're still buying the chips. Okay, when do we expect a return on this investment if we can't even turn it on? Batteries not included. Yikes. Very yikes for Amazon this morning. This bubble, guy, when this bubble goes, it is going to be just glorious watching this happen. Just be careful. All right, we've also got some earnings today. Let's go through these pretty quick. Ferrari shrugs off tariffs with higher third quarter profit. There's some interesting takeaways in this Ferrari earnings. They reported robust third quarter earnings as higher prices and demand for customized cars helped the luxury car maker defy concerns around U.S. tariffs and weaker China sales. Let's see. Net revenue rose 7.4% in the 3 months ended September, the Italian company said. Both results were better than analysts expected. Deliveries of models included the SF90XX and the 12 Cilindri boosted the result, Ferrari said, as well as more customers going for lucrative, personalized options. This helped offset the impact of U.S. tariffs and lower shipments of the $2.3 million Daytona SP3 supercar. Custom Ferraris are selling great. That's interesting. Ferrari shares rose as much as 3% in Milan, but the stock is down 16% year to date. The earnings come shortly after Ferrari shares tumbled the most since 2016 as investors balked at cautious long-term targets presented at the Capital Markets Day. The company has been hit by uncertainty from tariffs in the U.S., its largest market, weaker demand in China, and a broader luxury downturn. All right, so what does this tell us? This tells us that Ferrari's custom supercars, which are the most expensive of the most expensive, are doing really well. Now, keep in mind, we've had lousy results from Aston Martin, from Porsche, from Jaguar Land Rover, from Mercedes-Benz, right? All of the high-end European manufacturers are doing badly, except custom Ferraris. That tells me that even among the rich, which are supporting this economy right now, only the super, super rich are now doing very good. The poor rich, you know, only the multimillionaires, not the billionaires, but the multimillionaires, even they're struggling now, buying fewer Jaguars and Mercedes, but the custom Ferraris are still selling. The billionaire class is still doing really well. So fewer and fewer people doing well in this economy. Ferrari stock is up 1.5%. The opening bell has now rung here, but again, still down 8.1% year to date, despite good performance here. Now, Uber earnings. I don't know what to make of Uber earnings here, guys. They miss on profit, even as rideshare and delivery trips soar. Now, we're going to go fast through this because I don't know what to make of any of these numbers. And the reason why operating income for the 3 months ended September 30th came in at $1.11 billion, the company said. Analysts were expecting $1.62 billion. That was primarily due to undisclosed legal and regulatory matters, the CFO said in prepared remarks. All right, so this Bloomberg is talking about how we got a big miss in operating income because of undisclosed legal and regulatory matters. I have no idea what that is. And they didn't quantify it. All they said was a big miss. Okay, so that's a big charge that they're taking. But then if you go to this CNBC article, they're talking about something completely different. Uber falls 4% despite third quarter revenue beat. Now, on this one, they're talking about Uber said net income included a $4.9 billion benefit from a tax valuation release and a $1.5 billion net pre-tax benefit from revaluations of equity investments. They bought stocks and the stocks went up. So look, you got Bloomberg is saying the company missed because of a big, what was it? A big charge, a big legal and regulatory charge. Then CNBC says Uber had a great big benefit from taxes and their equity investments. All of this, pardon my French here, guys, all of this bullshit accounting makes it impossible to tell what Uber earnings really were. And this, I hate this about Silicon Valley companies. They always pull this crap. And look, right now, investors are not liking it. I guess in lieu of clarity, sell seems to be the consensus today. Uber stock down 9.3%, trading at $90.44. Year to date, though, this one's still up 65%. Another name that just did really well. Meanwhile, we got also earnings from Yum Brands, the fast food conglomerate. They are launching a strategic review for Pizza Hut amid sales slump. They're trying to figure out what do we do with Pizza Hut. Everything else is doing okay here, but that pizza's not selling. Yum Brands has initiated a strategic review for Pizza Hut, exploring options for the struggling chain as it falls behind in the highly competitive pizza market. Pizza Hut's performance indicates the need to take additional action to help the brand realize its full value, which may be better executed outside of Yum Brands, said CEO Chris Turner. So they're thinking about selling it. Yum rose 1% in pre-market trading. The stock is up 3.9% this year. The chain has underperformed other pizza brands as competitors increasingly turn to promotions to drive growth. Domino's and Papa John's reported growth in their North American business in the most recent quarter. Sales at existing Pizza Hut locations worldwide contracted 1% last quarter, marking the eighth straight quarter of falling sales. Yum also announced third quarter earnings on Tuesday, with its Taco Bell and KFC brands recording comparable sales growth of 7% and 2% in the U.S. respectively. Taco Bell's killing it. 7% here. Yikes. Is that people, they can't afford to eat at Applebee's or Chili's now, so they're going to Taco Smell? Maybe that's what's up. I don't know. KFC's also doing well, up 2%. KFC's international sales, which make up 86% of the brand's business, grew 3% on a comparable basis. That helped Yum's overall comparable sales rise 3% in the period, better than consensus for 2.6%. Its earnings per share, less one-time items, also topped analyst projections. So KFC and Taco Bell doing really well. Pizza Hut, not so much. Yum Brands is looking at possibly selling Pizza Hut, and the market seems to like it. Let's get an accurate mark here. The stock is up 4.4%. trading at $145.44, but year to date, this stock, it's up about 8.4% now, most of those gains coming just today. So kind of a mixed bag in earnings there. Uber, I don't know what to make of that one. Yum Brands, pretty good. Pizza Hut being the sole exception, and Ferrari, the super, super rich, are doing really well. Everybody else sucks. But hey, I just want to say hello and thank you to Mr. Austin Feinberg. Thank you very much. He says, can we all collectively short Carvana, please? You know what? Everybody in the auto space, except Ferrari, by the way, is hurting here. Subprime auto is toxic sludge right now. Nobody wants to touch it. Yet Carvana specializes in subprime auto, and Carvana just reported fantastic earnings in their last quarter. Something tells me Carvana's full of shit. Yeah, Austin. Am I short it? No. I'm not short it because this one has been the target of the meme stalkers and the Redditors before. That's risky. One day that mob could turn its attention to Carvana again and rally the stock 1,000% like they did with Beyond Meat. We all know where this one is going eventually, though. More and more cockroaches in subprime auto. There. By the way, check if you want to short Carvana, check out that Hindenburg research report about the Garcia family and their undisclosed related party transactions going on with Drive Time. Vertical integration means a house with no windows that nobody can see into what's going on inside it, and it could all go all at once. I'm not short Carvana personally, but I do think Carvana is, let's say that one is ripe. Let's put it that way. But just be careful. The meme stalkers could wipe you out there, Austin. Also, thank you to Metalseer, who's been a Melonhead member for 9 months. He says, is Venezuela about drugs, democracy, oil, or U.S. reserves? I'm going to say it's predominantly about oil, also about drugs, democracy. Let's be honest. If they weren't messing with the oil production and, you know, would we really care about a dictator being in charge? How many times has the United States supported dictators in other countries because they made favorable commodity or energy decisions? So no, I don't think it's about this, democracy or U.S. reserves, drugs. Yes. I mean, look, the South American cartels, the Mexican cartels are killing Americans in six-figure numbers every year. If that was happening at gunpoint, you better believe bombs and missiles would be flying, but they're doing it with chemicals, and so it's a little harder to detect and assign blame. And, you know, look, American pharmaceutical companies, every bit as indictable as South American cartels right now, right? Purdue Pharma's body count probably matches or even exceeds that of the Sinaloa cartel. And yet, Purdue Pharma, did anybody even go to jail there? I don't think so. So look, I could talk about this one for days on end. Let me just recommend that interview I did with Doomberg last week. Got a lot of positive feedback about that. It was a sensitive subject, elicited a lot of emotional responses. Thank you very much, Metal Seer, for supporting the channel. Madison Hypes, channeling Dr. Burry with her one-word comment, sell, mirroring what Dr. Burry famously said last year, which, by the way, didn't go so well for Dr. Burry. I am not short the indexes or the market right now. I do think we're teetering on the edge of a cliff. Are we going to go over today? Maybe, maybe not. The SOFR thing yesterday was a little scary. We got some relief from that today. Not that much. We've got a general risk-off sentiment in the morning. That's 2 days in a row that we've had that. Bitcoin is due for a correction. If Bitcoin goes down hard, I think it's going to drag the AI names with it because they have a lot of exposure there. Plenty of reasons to sell here, Madison. Just be careful, guys. Be careful on leverage. That's always going to be my takeaway there. Thank you so much for supporting the channel. Nacho Man with the pink one. What's going on, Nacho Man? He says circular trading. Buy some members, Mitch. All right. We're round-tripping revenue in the melon patch right now. I love it. Nacho Man, Randy Savage, thank you so much for everything you do for the channel, sir. Spooky Boozin says, I can buy a 5 Mega Millions or support you. I have chosen wisely. Mega Millions is $1? Well, that's a fool's tax, isn't it? Yes. Just think of all of the bells and whistles and, you know, your wildest dreams come true with a super chat to my channel. Isn't that how that works? Thank you very much, Spooky Buzzin. I appreciate Spooky Boozin or Spooky Buzzin. Thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. And may the odds be ever in your favor, sir. All right, guys, we are risk off this morning. Watch those Bitcoin names. Be careful on leverage. Good luck, Dr. Burry. I'm pulling for you on this one. Man, would I love it. Would I love Michael Burry short to be the one that takes down NVIDIA? Maybe, maybe not. But hey, I just want to say thank you so much, everybody, for the super chats and for supporting the channel. I appreciate that very much. As well as you magnanimous melonheads on Patreon, YouTube, and Buy Me a Coffee. Thank you so much for your membership support. Links down below. Should you feel so inclined, hit that like button and that subscribe button on the way out. All that good algo stuff. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.